irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Hoping that for those of you out there in the United States, you had a safe and fun Thanksgiving and that you're recovered and back in the office. So today we're excited to have with us Audra Jenkins. Audra is the Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer for Randstad in the United States. As a Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, Audra is responsible for working with Randstad's U.S. operating companies to further diversity strategies, both internally and externally, to elevate the diversity mission for their customers and Randstad overall. In this role, Audra provides clients across the organization with guidance for effective strategies in diversity, inclusion, veterans, and compliance. Audra also helps to run Randstad's Hire Hope program, designed by Randstad to provide career readiness training and job placement services to underserved and at-risk women, including survivors of exploitation and trafficking. Audra, I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, this is amazing. So please tell our listeners a little bit about your history. How did you come to be the Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer over at Randstad?
Well, I've worked in this field, HR, diversity, and compliance, for over 20 years. I came to Randstad about 10 years ago. I worked in the Randstad SourceRight arm of the business and just recently was promoted into Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer role. Amongst the things that I do for Randstad, I'm most proud of absolutely not only the diversity work, but the women what we do for survivors of sex trafficking and exploitation. So Hire Hope is definitely one of our major platforms for corporate social responsibility, but also my personal passion and mission to empower women.
That's amazing. I know the minute I read that in your bio, I said, oh my gosh, we have to talk, because it's such an important thing. I think you and I were talking a little bit before the show. I just got back from building our first school in Nepal using a portion of my company's proceeds, and it's been a dream of mine. I mean, to be able to help, you know, women, and there are men too, believe it or not, who are sex trafficked. You wouldn't even think about it, but in Africa and Cambodia and different parts of the world, it's not just a man-woman thing, but I think that it's definitely more predominantly women than men, correct?
It is, and I think definitely if you look at it in the on the U.S. side, you're going to see probably even split of men and women. I think for us, it was just having a female CEO. It was important to look at how we can do to impact women in the communities that we serve. And I think that's how we started with women in our Hire Hope program.
That's amazing. So do you, just in case some of our listeners out there might be inspired or want to participate in it, is that something that you ever look for volunteers for, or is it solely run by the employees at Randstad? How does that work?
We do. We would not be successful without our corporate partners. So many of our client partners are heavily involved. And if anyone wants more information, Jennifer, they can reach out to me directly. We have a great community partnership program where we work with community partners. This is where we get our pipeline of young women that we help support. And then we also have corporate partners to help us with job placement. So not only do we provide the training, we provide the on-the-job training as well as a paid apprenticeship as part of the program. So it's a 22-week program that we get a new group of women every quarter, to go through that cycle.
That's amazing. It's so great to get to give back. I know there's a charity here in the United States, or in LA rather, that we help veterans to do the same thing, and just to get to see the transformation, whether it's veterans or people who are disabled or people who have been trafficked. I mean, to be able to give them that leg up and that opportunity is such an incredible gift.
It is. We really absolutely love it. And I don't know if you're aware that one of our corporate headquarters is in Atlanta, and that's one of the top 10 cities for trafficking, as well as LA, of course, the top corridors for underage sex trafficking, which is a huge focus area of ours, making sure that, we're able to help those survivors. Many young women or young girls or runaways or people that are abducted within the first 10 days, they are put into trafficking, victims as young as 5 years old.
Wow. I know. It's mind-blowing. I have friends who sit on the board for UN Women, and when I started learning about that a couple of years ago, it just broke my heart in half to find out about that. I think you and I are so lucky to be business women who are successful and be able to have an education and go forward into the world and, you know, get a paying job and not have to rely on somebody else. And we're, you know, I just think the education is paramount importance to be able to give people access to choice, because if you don't understand that there are other options, then, you know, you're in a position to be victimized, unfortunately, by predators out there.
I think it's, I don't think it's something that young people intentionally get involved in. I think that they are lured into it. You know, there's a lot of people that just prey upon young girls and young boys, you know, for this, for sex trafficking. And then there's also a huge demand for it, you know, would not be an industry. It's one of the fastest growing forms of trade. It's a modern day form of slavery, and it absolutely needs to be addressed. And I'm very proud of the work that Ronstadt has done around the Higher Hope program to make sure that we are making a difference, you know, in all the communities that we serve.
Oh, that's amazing that you guys are doing that. And how are you seeing? I know I've seen a lot of articles and press releases right now about women in the workplace. Are we seeing that women are starting to get equal pay, higher level jobs, more of these C-level executive jobs, or have we made any progress basically on that front?
I think we're making some gains. There was a report out by Standard & Poor's back in January that said that only 5.2% of the CEOs in the top S&P 500 companies are women. You know, that's very deplorable. You know, if you think about that in 2017, I think there's a huge push now. There's a lot of states with pay equity laws that are preventing companies from asking about current pay, so that women can be paid the market rate versus based on what they currently earn, to make it more of a level playing field. As we see more and more states adopt those laws, I think it does help elevate the conversation, but I don't think it closes the gap. We have much more work to do in that area.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because in California, they rolled out something a little bit different a year or so ago, where they said you can't base someone's incoming salary on what they were making in the past. So at that point, it wasn't illegal yet to ask somebody what they were making. And again, it's for this very reason, to try and promote women, minorities, people with disabilities, et cetera, with getting more equal pay. And then new legislation just came out in California specifically, stating that as of, I think it's January 2018, it will be illegal to ask somebody what they're making. But I would love your two cents on this, because from my standpoint, you know, owning a recruiting firm and, you know, having been in recruitment for 13 plus years myself, it's a catch-22, because a lot of people don't know their own fair market value. And now that we're moving into this kind of Wild West unknown territory, it's a catch-22, because on the one hand, I have some amazing talented women out there. When they tell me they offer their salary up voluntarily, I stop them right then and I pause the conversation. I say, please don't give that information up. That's a protected thing. And then people say, well, how do I know what I'm supposed to ask for? So what do you tell your candidates and clients? How do you handle that question from a bigger corporate standpoint?
I think there's several things. You know, for our approach is we talk about pay expectations versus specific pay. You know, what range are you that will be acceptable to you? We also tell them to make sure that they, you know, understand the role, understand the market. You know, there's a lot of tools out there that you can use that's for free to kind of gauge the prevailing wage, you know, for that skill set and the years of experience. I think it's important for candidates now, I mean, especially women, to do a lot of research and make sure that they understand, you know, what the wages are, you know, for the market, for their skill set. If you don't do the research, you don't try to look at other job descriptions, you know, you can research things on the various job boards. You know, there's a lot of different ways to try to gain that, you know, that data. You know, I don't want to advertise any particular site, you know, on your show, Jennifer, but definitely, you know, I say research, understand what you're worth. Don't base it on what you make. Understand what the prevailing wage is for that specific skill set. I think that's really critical.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because on my end, I just wrote an article about this on LinkedIn recently about how to handle it, because people are a little bit flummoxed by this. I have told people flat out, absolutely, if you could be making $40,000 a year and go into a company and ask for $100,000 a year, but it goes back to, can you provide that much value? And that's a whole other differentiator with women that I've found, at least in the workplace, is that I find that as a society, and I've had other experts on the show about women in the workplace, and we've talked about how women have a harder time owning our value. So there's almost like, say you took an individual who was 40 or 50,000 below market and you promoted her up, and or she got a new job paying her 100,000. Do you think that's going to impact her ability to perform if she's feeling guilt-ridden or doubts her ability to produce that level of value? How are we going to bridge that gap is what I'm curious about.
I think that there's a lot of things I think that will help bridge the gap. I think first and foremost, some of the things that cause the gap is the idea, this thought process that, you know, there should only be one at the top. You know, women don't support other women. I think that's one of my biggest pet peeves. There's some hidden rivalry there that, you know, because you're successful in an executive role, you know, you can't help someone else, you know, gain that level within the company or within the industry. And I don't understand that. You know, I grew up with the mindset that, you know, you're respectful of everyone. You act in an honorable way, in an honorable fashion with integrity. And I just don't think it's acting in good form. You know, it doesn't help other women when we don't support women in our own organization or in our industry. And I think that's one of the biggest issues and gaps. I think another one is that making sure that women, we tend to ask for a seat at the table versus creating a seat at the table. And this is something, Jennifer, I wish I'd learned in my 20s and 30s. You know, I thought, gosh, you know, I keep waiting and waiting my turn to get this opportunity to get promoted. And if I just keep my head down and work hard, it's coming. And it didn't come. And I thought, wow, I'm just working so hard, but it's not visible to anyone that makes the decisions about who gets moved or promoted. So I think it's about stop asking for the seat, create the seat. You know, learn, get an advocate, get a sponsor, ask for a mentor, you know, and maybe your mentor may not necessarily be somebody in the direct line of management for you. It could be someone lateral in the company that you see as successful. You need that opportunity. You need that mentorship and that sponsorship and that advocacy. And we tend to not go after those stretch assignment jobs as well. Men will apply for a job they're not even remotely qualified. They may have 2 of the 10 qualifications and go, yeah, I'm going to get this job. Women, on the other hand, we may have 80% of the qualifications and go, well, I'm lacking that other 20. I better not apply. I better not even try. We talk ourselves out of it. It's almost like a self-sabotage. And I think if I could go back and talk to my 20-year-old self, I'd say, stop self-sabotaging your career and go after the stretch assignment. I think we're our own worst enemy in that regard.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think there was a guest we had on the show earlier this year, Why Women Don't Get the Corner Office. And we definitely touched on that. Is I've been called a shark or a ball buster in my day because I was somebody who was determined and driven and tenacious. And so I feel like it's not something that's socially acceptable a lot of the time for a woman to have those attributes, to be able to go out there and open a company or get an executive level job. I think that it's frowned upon, you know, culturally and in certain parts of the country, even here, where it's not acceptable. Even when I was in Nepal a couple weeks ago, we were talking to the locals and it was a really great opportunity to have what we called a gender dialogue with a translator in Nepal. And we talked to the local village women and the local men, and women in Nepal, not surprisingly, can't own property. But they're not able to really do anything other than cleaning and cooking. And it's so funny, you would think that we've come much further, but they couldn't wrap their heads around the fact that I'm a woman in my 30s and I don't have children and I'm married and I run a company. And why am I not at home with the kids? You know, it was just the furthest thing from their mind that they could fathom.
I think it's all about perspective, Jennifer. I think you have to meet people where they are in life, and bring them something that will, that they can understand and grasp to. So maybe they raise children, but maybe could they start an opportunity where, they volunteer to help take care of someone else's children so that they could do something that could generate income for their family. I think we have to look at where they are in life and meet people where they are. One of the things that I get asked a lot is, why is it that women in 2017 are still making 20% less than men? Mm. I wish I had the answer to that question. It doesn't seem plausible with so many educated, talented women. I don't understand that myself, and I have to look myself in the mirror at night and say, did I do enough with my platform, with my own voice? Did I say enough? Did I encourage another woman? Did I help someone else? Did I give back? Am I checking all those things that make a difference? So that I can look myself in the mirror, but also look into the eyes of my own daughters, so that I'm hopeful for their future, if they have better opportunities.
So on that note, what do you see in the horizon? Do you see that in the next year, 5 years, 10 years, that we will have a dramatic increase in women in executive roles? Do you think that this might be a touchy subject and you can feel free not to answer, but do you think that in 2020 there will be another female presidential candidate, and do you think people will be more receptive at that time, or is it still not something people would culturally even consider?
I think if we have... Those are good questions, and I want to be very thoughtful and about my response, Jennifer.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot.
A few things. No. This is a great conversation, great dialogue. So to start with the first part of it, what do I see the next 10 to 20 years? Obviously the rise of AI, robotics in the workplace is a huge concern, because there is a negative impact on women because we have a low proportion of women in STEM. So what does that mean for jobs creations in the future for women? If we don't encourage young teenagers and women, early talent, to go into these fields, then what's going to happen as far as the work, the workforce, what would that workforce be made of? Robots and men and no women? There's a huge concern there. We need to really be thinking about the limited skill sets, that's going to happen by displaced workers and automation. I think that's one of the things. So we're starting to see some of that with self-driving vehicles for sure. And, self-service, like self-checkouts, as simple as a self-checkout at a grocery store. Will they eventually have grocery stores that are just not even run by any humans, just all automated, automated process? I think the biggest thing that we need to really focus in on is how can we train and retool our existing women in the workforce? So how do we think about what will their next step be? We think about things that will come up from AI. For example, what are the likely jobs that robots will take? Those repetitive jobs, accounting jobs, payroll jobs, things that we have a human in today. What can we do to retool them to find something else to do that's relevant in the world of automation and the workforce of the future? I think that's the first part of that. As far as the 2020 election, I think that I'm so hopeful that we will get to a place where it is plausible, that there can be, regardless of party affiliation, a woman that can lead our, free country and free world. We have so many other countries with female presidents and leaders that I think that if we're supposed to be the best country in the world, why don't we have a female leader here as well that's equal to any other female leader in any other country? I'm very hopeful that one day we will see that. I don't know if that will happen in 2020. It could happen. I don't know. I'm very hopeful of that for the sake of my daughters and for sake of all women, just to have that. One more glass ceiling that's been broken for women.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it's funny what you're talking about. It never even occurred to me about how AI and robotics might preclude women from getting those types of jobs, because women don't, like you said, or at least as a percentage, don't seem to gravitate towards those positions as much. And it was this morning I was driving in with my Uber driver, because I Uber pretty much everywhere I go. And I always love to talk to people about their stories. And this woman was telling me she was in sales for 20 plus years and loves Ubering because she has a son who's 10 years old, and it gives her the flexibility to, you know, be at home when she needs to be at home and, you know, pick her son up from school and then spend the necessary time with him. But what's scary is, I'm sure you saw the article that Uber just bought thousands upon thousands of Volvo's self-driving cars. And so, you know, that's a job that a lot of stay-at-home moms might be doing now, but, or moms that are out of work, that's going to go by the wayside as well. So it's going to be curious to see what happens with all this automation. You know, Tesla just rolled out the truck. I remember I had a guest on the show at the beginning, I think it was of this year, who said, you know, there are jobs out there. Like, for example, truck drivers. Tesla just came out with this new semi truck that very well could drive itself. And then you have a vast majority of the population who is unemployed for that reason. So do you think that we're going to see a huge rise in unemployment rates, or do you think that there is the necessary retraining out there to keep people employed at a steady rate?
Well, I think that we definitely need to look at several things. I think here at Bronstar, one of the things that we do for our clients is partnering, when we're talking about talent and talent acquisition, is making sure that anything that we can do to create a bridge or reentry program or opportunity is always going to be a win-win. The win-win because we're helping to impact maybe stay-at-home moms who took a brief hiatus to raise their children. Just like the driver you mentioned earlier in Uber, she might have just wanted a break, but maybe she wants to get back into the workforce once her child is, you know, more self-sufficient. And, you know, I think that we have to really think, start looking at that now. I don't think we can wait until, you know, the rise of the robot, you know, to decide what's going to happen to women. I think we've got to make that decision. How do we start retooling? How do we create training programs? How do we create a bridge so that women that do take time off to start a family and they have the education and the past experience, they just need a little bit retraining and get up to speed on the latest technology or the latest programming to be, you know, a very strong contributor to the workplace. And, you know, we just got to think, how can we make those investments now? I don't think companies are thinking that far out. I think some companies, obviously tech companies, are thinking a little bit about that. My major concern is if we don't have women working on AI and robotics, then will there be some bias built into the programming of the AI, the tool or the, you know, the robotics that we're, you know, going to be utilizing, and what will that, how will that impact the broader community, you know, from a cultural context? I think that's one of the, you know, one of the things that we need to really, you know, definitely focus in on. But you know, I think, Jennifer, the biggest opportunity is not to wait 10 years. I think the biggest opportunity is start now. You know, look at women now that are ready to go back to work and get reacclimated and up to speed. And what kind of training can we put in place today to prepare for, you know, what's coming in the next 10, 20 years?
I completely agree with you. And my question is about when you're discussing retraining, and I know I've talked to different organizations that do help moms get back to work, which is amazing, or people who have taken time off. How effective or successful, what is the success rate? Say you take an individual who maybe did Uber for 2 or 3 years, or he or she, let's say she in this case, you know, took 3 or 4 years off to raise young children. How successful do you find it is to take that person who had a skill in A and then train them in B, C, D, E, or F? Do they wind up staying in that new field and being measurably successful?
Well, I look at it just like, you know, another big passion of mine besides Higher Hope is definitely veteran hiring and veteran employment. You know, we just earlier, a few weeks ago, we celebrated Veterans Day. And I think I look at it, how do we take and translate military skills to the civilian workforce? I think it's the same thing. You have to look at how do we take existing or past skills and how does that translate into what's needed in the future? You know, you know, if you had an engineering degree and you didn't use that for 10 years, you would need retraining, you know, regardless of what your career is today. So I just think that how do we get that continuing education piece and make I don't want to say a nano degree, but maybe just an abridged immersion opportunity for someone. You know, one of the things I talk about with women in STEM is, you know, regardless of women that get a seat at the table, we always have to make sure that, you know, you're looking beyond the job description. We always are so focused on something we created probably in the 1970s or 80s to decide that now in 2017, you've got to meet all 20 of these things we never looked at for 20 years. You know, how do we revamp the way we advertise jobs? I think that's one way. And the other part of it is, how do we look at our existing workforce? So say you have some people in some of these entry-level early talent roles, you know, are they capable? Are they fast learners? You know, can you sit with somebody and cross-train into a new skill set? I mean, I think there's many ways to do a bridge or reentry, you know, program. I remember, you know, in the early 2000s where companies were doing job share, that was a whole new, high-tech thing to do was, I didn't want to lose my talent because they went off to have a child. So I'm willing to do a job share and make that one FTE split with two part-time people, you know, to fill this role, you know, to keep that talent. So I think if we can figure out ways to look at what is needed in the future or what is needing, what is coming, I have a kind of a visionary view of that. And look at what skill sets we have today. I don't think it's just not only the women that are reentering the work that need this retraining. I think it's people that are continuously working that will need retraining that are going to be displaced by these by robotics and automation. You know, they're going to need some other skill set. That's going to be, maybe it's, you know, programming. Maybe it's, you know, how do you go in and do service? You know, robots that are having issues, or, you know, the computer programming behind it. You know, we just need to figure out what is it that is coming so that we can start training and preparing for now. You know, it could be something as very simple as a 10-week course on something, you know, that's supported at a local tech school. You know, there's a lot of ways we could do this. I just think companies just have to make the investment and the time.
You know, we've noticed even with a lot of our clients, I remember when I started recruiting about 13, 14 years ago, when a client of ours would give us a requisition, that client would say exactly what they wanted. And they wanted it very precisely, just what you said. You know, it had been that way for 30 years and that's what they wanted it to look like. And I think that there's such a shortage of talent right now because we are in an employee-driven market that we're seeing employers think way outside of the box for jobs that used to be very specific and regimented and what they were looking for, which is a good sign in many ways. But even you and I sitting here today and having this conversation, we are moving towards the future. Will we have flying cars? I don't know. Will we have self-driving cars? Very likely. We're already there. And how is the automation of society going to impact jobs that are available? I look at my mom, for example, who's been a nurse for 40 plus years. And, you know, some of the stuff that she's doing now are, there's a huge nursing boom and a need for nurses that on the staffing side that I've heard of in the industry. And yet, will those people be made irrelevant in 10 or 20 years? I don't know. And that's a common job for women, I would say, more so than men.
It is. And I think, too, you have to look at, you know, one of the things that, you know, I was reading about earlier today was, I think there was a Pew research study that World Economic Forum published, and they were talking about, you know, how likely, you know, people think that, you know, robotics will play in the healthcare field, for example. You know, will doctors use computers to diagnose and treat diseases? And more than 58% of those respondents said yes. You know, they really think that that's really likely to occur. So if that's the case, then, you know, will there also be not only just the impact on nurses, but will there be impact on the number of doctors needed if we're relying on, you know, programs to treat and determine, you know, cures for most diseases and or ailments?
And in our industry, I'm not sure if Randstad does staffing and legal, but I know in our industry, in the legal industry out here in California, I've been doing talks around the country for the last 3 years. A very common job, often done by women, proportionately more women than men, is being a legal secretary or legal assistant. And for many, many years, you know, you would have one secretary assigned to one attorney or, you know, two or three attorneys maybe at most. And now we're seeing that it's not the case at all. You're getting these five or 10 people assigned to one person, and more positions are becoming eliminated. And in fact, I was at a roundtable discussion about this, and there was a law firm, I think it was in Russia, that completely did away with all administrative support and assistance for that office for 30 attorneys. And so as we move away, I think that's where women are really going to be in the biggest pickle, is that a good majority of women, like we said, are in support roles rather than leadership roles. And it's those roles that are falling further and further away from what we're seeing out there in the market.
You know, absolutely, Jennifer. I think that we've got to find a way to close this gender gap and promote women in the workplace. I think that that should be a very, you know, a top priority, you know, for all companies, because, you know, I think one of the things that we fail to look at is what is the consumerism around women. Women make a lot of the major purchasing decisions. So if you look at, you know, advertisers and, you know, what a lot of consumers, you know, advertise for, there's generally going to be a woman involved in that advertisement, because women tend to make a lot of those major decisions or have a huge voice in those decisions for the household. And if you think about that, then you want to make sure you have women involved in the item or service that you're trying to provide, you know, in the consumer marketplace, because they're going to be the buyer. You know, if you don't have the voice of the buyer at the table helping to design what we're offering, then I think that that's going to be a huge gap and a huge impact to many organizations' revenue as a result. You know, I just don't think we look at the value of having women, you know, in all ranks of the business, in all levels of a company or organization, because there's value at every level.
Yeah, and do you think, I know this was a topic that came up as well with one of the other guests that we were talking about, women in the workplace, is do you see on your end that employers are being more adaptable, like what we're talking about, job sharing and giving employees flexible schedules to be able to take time off? Because I know in the United States, at least, we're way behind other countries like France or Canada or different places where they offer a year off of maternity leave. And here, you know, if you have the right FMLA leave, you might be able to get 2 or 3 months. Do you see that shifting? Or do you think that because of the fact that there's going to be less of a need for women prominent roles, that people are going to cut those perks? Which direction do you see it going?
I think there would be huge uprising if those perks were cut. I think we tend to have, because again, there's a talent scarcity, and I think flexibility is one of those things that companies can offer without cutting into their own profitability and revenue. So I think that look in getting equal amount of service. Another big conundrum that's going to rise with that is I think about the millennial factor. A lot of millennials don't want to work in a full-time job. They want to own their own business or work in the rise of the gig economy. That's one of the things that we look at in Ronstadt all the time is how do we look at, you know, one of our businesses was Ronstadt FirstRight. They have a payroll independent contracting solution business where we are dealing with people that only want to do contract work. They're not interested in full-time work anymore. I think that's going to be, that's really playing into the whole talent scarcity today. I think that's only going to continue as people look for that greater flexibility. And if companies don't adapt and try to, you know, it's going to be a continuous war for talent. We will see that more and more, regardless of automation and robotics. I mean, even with the rise of robotics and automation, there are some things that's going to take time to transition skills and things to do. I mean, it's changing a whole way of doing business with many organizations. You know, I just don't see that happening overnight. I think it's going to be it definitely will happen. I think it's definitely going to happen in the next 10 to 20 years. I think in the immediate term, we need to look at what is it that we can do with the talent today, you know, and they want that flexibility. Millennials demand it.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. Like I said, it's the wild, wild west that we're getting into because there are so many changes on the horizon. And the other question is, too, is how much longer will we stay in an employee-driven market? Because as you and I both know, having been in this industry, it's cyclical. So every 5 to 10 years, it switches. And then what happens to, you know, the salary situations and the perks if it does flip back to an employer market? But none of us have a crystal ball, or at least if I do, I don't think it would be worth much. So we just have to kind of bide our time. And like you said, do take measurable steps, do the things that we can right now. If you're a woman out there listening and you're thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, what Audra said is relevant and maybe I should start retraining, talk to Randstad or find other organizations in your area that can support you in that retraining so that you don't find your skills obsolete. And God forbid we do go back to an employer market, you don't want to be a sitting duck, untrained and not valuable in the marketplace.
Absolutely.
So Audra, I could talk to you for hours. I mean, you have so many wonderful tidbits to share with our listeners out there, and it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. I do want to make sure that people, again, know where to find information about you, about Randstad, and about Higher Hope program, in case they want more information on that. So can you share with our listeners once more, please, a little bit about where to find information on you or your organization?
Sure. You can find me on LinkedIn at Audra Jenkins. You can follow me on Twitter at the Audra Jenkins. You can also reach out to our website, which is ronstad.us.com. And you can also email me at audra.jenkins@ronstadusa.com.
Perfect. Yeah, you've given our listeners a lot of food for thought and things to consider, especially heading into the holidays. For our listeners out there who might be thinking of, you know, either reentering the workforce or making a career transition, this is a great time of year to start to look into 2018 and figure out what you want 2018 to look like, because a lot of the hiring is done in the first or second quarter of the year, because that's when people have their budgets to bring on new teams, staff, training, etc. So I would definitely keep your eyes out there for new opportunities if you are considering making a move. And as always, we invite you to go ahead and follow us on the Get Yourself the Job Facebook page. You can leave us any feedback, any comments you might have there, any questions you'd like us to ask guests in the future, or you can always subscribe and download the show on iTunes. The week following the show, it's available for free to subscribe and download on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job, or immediately following the show under the Get Yourself the Job archive section of the LA Talk Radio website. So thank you so much, Audra. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. Wishing everybody happy holidays out there, and thanks so much for tuning in.
Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.